the idea.
Yeah, that's right. In other words,
classification
would continue until the new owners took the action required under here for withdrawal. In other words, it would automatically continue, is the idea.
Anyway,
I just
wondered
one point. What if an individual wants to change the background,
anybody built around that area, they should have some kind of an agreement which would bind that property for continued use and have a restriction.
Well, in other words, the community has got a right. And any retransfer of that property to another use, much like a building where the residential property is being single-family to multi-family, there is a procedure for community input to a hearing and center.
If somebody were to build around it, for example, they would have to take that into consideration, make the necessary agreements to stabilize the use of the property. But, of course, what you're getting at is if it became an open space the community was used to, then the community would have to absorb the cost and condemn or take some other action to maintain that open space.
Well, I'm saying, you've got to do an elaborate procedure to make a zone change.
Well, isn't any zone change subject to existing uses? Well, you can't take away a person's constitutional right. You know, in other words,
I see the point you're making, Bob, at this point in time, I wonder if it is, and I think it's a good thing to tell more often. I think if we get out there, we feel into it. You start off with an idea, you try to draft an example you can see. You try to visualize it, and I've worked with like 10 houses in Park Revenue, and you understand what we're trying to do here. And so you draft in language, but we're really not sure quite how it's going to work out.
My
point
is, Mr. Chairman, is only that
Sure. Why don't you just bring it over and give it to your clerk.
Further questions?
Thank you.
Close the hearing on Senate Bill 541 and open the hearing on HJR
53. Yay, that's me.
There you go.
Come on.
HJR. Put your head.
Good or bad?
Mr. Chairman and distinguished members of the committee, where the hell are you going? And other distinguished members of the committee. Thank you. House Joint Resolution 53, matter under discussion. I think, as most of you know, I have a hang up on improving the legislative process to make it more responsive to the people of Oregon and to endeavor to make it a co-equal branch with the executive and judiciary. I think House Joint Resolution would help considerably in this manner. The bill as written suggests, because it is not a statute, that joint standing committees be appointed in both the House and the Senate, and these committees would be allowed, not only allowed, but urged to meet together to to consider bills of considerable importance, the bills that most of you know the kind they are, like, well, Senate Bill 40 and such important bills as this, and maybe not even that important. And this invites the public to come only one time. They would only have to appear once for these major hearings, the fuel burning bill. Many of these that we've had two and three and four and five hearings on, maybe in one house, and then the bill goes through that house and comes over to the other house, and we go through the same process. And this is a terrible injustice to the public, really, to invite them to come down. And in many cases, it's the loss to the state because, as most of you know, as you're well aware, the witnesses in many, many, many bills, in many cases, are state employees that we're dragging away from their work. The bill, as outlined, would provide that the committees vote separately. They do not vote as a Senate committee or a House. I mean, they do vote as a Senate committee or a House committee, not as a joint committee. This leaves the individual prerogatives to each House and does no violence to our concept of checks and balances in the House and the Senate. This part of the bill is really for the benefit of the public, and I think it would perhaps reduce our hearings maybe by a third and would cut down on the time that we have to spend in Salem. The other provision of the bill is relative to interim committees. And the theory here is that the interim committees would be appointed by the Speaker and the President of the House as they saw fit. It does not say what interim committee shall be appointed, but those that are appointed would be made up of the members of the House and the Senate who would serve on those committees, hopefully, at the next session. And the theory here, of course, is that after they've had the interim committee study, then they don't have to spend nearly as much time plowing the same ground over that they've already plowed during the interim committee. It leaves entirely to the discretion of the Speaker and the President what committees will be funded and what committees will be appointed. And this is the main thrust of the bill. It's a good bill and it should pass.
Bob, the only question I would have, and I certainly agree with it, but as chairman of state and federal affairs for several years, I tried several night and afternoon hearings with the Senate state and federal affairs, and invariably we only got four or five from the House and one or two from the Senate. Yeah, and I did the overall area of knowledge on the committee when we began to discuss the bill was far better than the system that we're now operating with, where we have to come in. But maybe if the President and the Senate had, in the start, worked on this concept, then I would think that we would get someplace. Now, we met one jointly with the Senate on our highway committee this time. Really cut down on the number of times that the people from Ontario, Oregon had to come down.
Exactly the point. Exactly.
And I would hope that we would make it a point, and you know, we're having a hearing now that nobody's notified now, besides state officials. I would hope that we would, by doing something like this, we would get away from this trend of, God, let's go home. I mean,
Transportation could hold dozens of joint hearings.
Yeah.
And when the committees vote separately, there's no violence done to the House-Senate concept.
I think the county has spent probably, I don't know how many thousands of dollars in bringing county officials up to testify at both in the House and the Senate. We don't want tourists, and we don't want these out-of-county people. We're trying to cut out on tourism and get the cars off the road. That's what we're trying. Well, I'm the governor of that.
Gentlemen, you've strayed from the point of my bill.
I believe in all this.
We cannot instruct the President and the Speaker to do these things, but we can show the intent of the majority of the legislature.
Then one, I move that we turn the House resolution 53 to both names back. Then one, we get our 53 to both names
back. Go.
Aye.
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 Aye. Aye. Aye. Aye. Aye. Aye. Aye. Aye. Aye. Aye. Aye. Aye. Aye. Aye. Aye. Aye. Aye. Aye. Aye. Aye. Aye. Aye. Aye. Aye. Aye. Aye. Aye. Aye. Aye. Aye. Aye. Aye. Aye. Aye. Aye. Aye. Aye. Aye. Aye. Aye. Aye. Aye. Aye. Aye. Aye. Aye. Aye. Aye. Aye. Aye. Aye. Aye. Aye. Aye. Aye. Aye. Aye. Aye. Aye. Aye. Aye. Aye. Aye. Aye. Aye. Aye. Aye. Aye. Aye. Aye. Aye. Aye. Aye. Aye. Aye. Aye. Aye
Pleasure to do business with you.
Yeah, no, I can't.
I don't have any paper there, Robert.
Which is really an engrossment of the entire law with the changes in it. And I thought it would be easier to follow, and these are the actual. Okay? If you will look at the document dated May 25th, I think it's easier to follow.
No, I'm rewriting the tenure bill to give me tenure for life. Even if you never teach again.
Most of the amendments involved here are also in Senate Bill 314, which has been passed out of the Senate Committee and has to do with the consultation law. What has happened in this session, I think, is an enormous improvement over what now, over that present statute. The first page of the May 25th engrossment script contains definitions which are not now in the present law. Subsection 3 is important to teachers in that it describes with specific what is expected of school boards in the phrase confer, consult, and discuss in good faith. It added to that. Have a mutual obligation to meet and confer in order to exchange freely information, opinions, and proposals, to endeavor to reach agreements, and to seek to implement the agreements that are reached. And those three items added to that confer, consult, and discuss part of the statute has been a very important to teachers. This time it deals in, this deals with both mediation and fact-finding and replaces the old impasse committee. The budget calendar is for a purpose which I'll get to in just a minute. It does separate teachers and administrators in separate categories for the purposes of conferring, consulting, and discussing The on page two, the section three of the May 25th document, all that material which is underlined is new and a change from the present statute. Page two, for the most part, just makes the change that the to the teachers and administrators, but in the last of the second paragraph, you'll find the sentence, in the event an employee organization is elected, the organization shall have the right to select its representatives, which is new in the statute. This allows, in subsection 2 there, toward the bottom of the page, one underlying change. In regard to elections, 30 days after the first day of each school year, to determine by one or more elections conducted by the board or its designate. This has already been done in several places where the teachers wanted the election to be conducted outside of the school system. And this simply puts into the statute, I think, what many districts may already be doing. The subsection 3 on page 3 changes the election procedure. I'll go through that if you wish. That is the same change in election procedure that has been made in Senate Bill 314. Subsection 4 deals with the a new section on ways in which a new election may be held. Then section 4 is almost entirely new in the present statute. This does two things. First of all, it adopts a budget calendar. The purpose there was to break away from the difficulty we were having in reaching an end of the year and getting the work of the budget done, and a levy on the on the election procedures. This sort of deals with an orderly way to get at this, and I think it's one of the best changes in the bill. The second change is to get away from the impasse procedure and go to something much simpler, which is that you may first invoke mediation at a definite deadline date, and then there are 5 days in which the two parties may select a mediator. That takes care of the Burns, where they probably will select one there. It need not come from the state superintendent. And there is a panel of people from the state superintendent's office from whom the state superintendent can send one mediator. If within 10 days mediation doesn't work, the board may request a fact finder, and that person is given 15 days in which to submit in writing to the board, to the teachers or administrators, a report of the recommendation for a reasonable basis for the settlement of the disagreement. Subsection 4, which was the last agreement we all came to over this, was that the consultation may continue during the time that the mediation and fact finding is being conducted. Section 5 was important to the teachers. If requested by either party, agreements reached under the provisions shall be written. This simply says that at the time anything you do agree upon, you should write down. The entire procedure has to be completed 30 days before the budget date for delivery of the budget message. And then the subsection 2, which was strongly recommended by many teachers, which provides the district school board to provide a first teacher for determining teachers and administrators' views on issues other than matters of economic issues, etc. Now, most school districts, I think most good school districts do that, and there's a very good question as to whether you need to write that specific into the law. But it does provide a procedure and ask that the school board do it. That would allow for better attention to the non-economic items which the teachers have asked for. And this provides us a procedure for taking care of that without having it in a two-party negotiation system. Almost everything that is in here except the impasse, I think, could be done by agreement at a local level, and has been done by agreement at some local levels, except the mediation and the fact finder system. But it does write into law a good deal of what some districts are already doing, and I think it's been a great improvement on the present process. It should be much more orderly. I hope it'll help us pass few levies. The teachers have agreed on it. The school boards have agreed on it. Everybody doesn't like it, but it does reach reasonable compromise among almost all the groups and parties who are involved. Pardon? I think it's really a substantial change, but it's been in the works all session. The process that brought it about is really the work of a great many people and pulls together a set of agreements, Mr. Chairman, among people who would, almost all of whom would like to have something other than what's here, all the way from nothing at all to something much more complex.
Mary, then, the intent is to amend this bill to talk about negotiations too, right?
Right, because that's what we had over here, which we could be working on while Senate Bill 314 is being sent back and forth from the floor of the Senate to the committee. I think it will be on the floor of the Senate tomorrow. But I think it's important that we have a attention to the consultation process in this session, and this gives us a route for doing it.
I have just some specific questions, then. First, on page 4 of this Hand and Growth bill here, it starts with, and this, now page 5 too, lists some interesting percentages, some of which are new, some of which aren't. An election may be called at the request of an organization, may be placed on the ballot either by having a membership number of 40%. You know why 40% is there?
Well, I do, but I think if you wouldn't mind, Mr. Chairman, it'd be good to have Mr. Danielson or some of these other people answer those questions specifically. Would that be right?
I'm sure. Well, I'm coming.
Could they join me here?
Yeah, bring them all.
They followed this all the way through the Senate side.
And Ray Bates.
Harold, do you want to join us? No, it would be all right with you. I have another committee going this time. If I could be file Representative Ricky, and then you can take these people in their order. I have another committee.
Come on, come up right now.
Are you through Representative Ricky?
Yes, I think so. We can we'll have requests here if they want to.
I would speak to this.
The other education committee
thing now. I would speak to the what you might call an engrossed bill, a new approach to this whole problem. Not so much to the specifics of the thing, but to the problem that they are attempting to solve. I was on a state and federal affairs committee which was handling education bills in one of the late sessions, and we adopted this so-called consultation bill. And at that time, they said teachers, the Oregon Education Association, said that the school board would not sit down with them and discuss salaries, and that they needed some kind of a medium just to require them to sit down and talk about it. Because most of them actually were discussing salaries, but there were some that wouldn't even talk about it. And so we passed the bill, and I think that it had, since its passage, a very beneficial effect upon teacher salaries. But it certainly has created a great many problems in the process. And we have had all kinds of attitudes expressed on this measure, ranging from some school boards who resent having to do anything at all in the line of discussion. And we have some groups who would be satisfied with nothing less than taking the question clear away from the school board and having it decided by some outside agency. At the end, if they can't agree, then they take it clear away from them. There are another one of the problems raised was to what they should discuss. And this might seem like a very simple problem, but there are certain aspects of the school program that should not be decided by a school board or by a group of teachers, but by educational research. In other words, you don't decide on what kind of an operation you perform on a patient by means of a vote of a pressure group. You decide it by good medical practice, and the same would be true in educational practice. That educational research shall decide many of these items. Now this bill, and I have read it, and I approve it, does something in both of these areas. It extends the things that teachers may confer, consult, and discuss about. So that some of the areas that some of the school boards may have rejected discussing at all, it takes up. I think one of them is the duties outside the classroom and that type of thing, which seems to me a legitimate economic matter to be discussed. But it does something else that I consider exceedingly important, and that is that it separates some of the emotional tension that is rubbed off on the public as a result of these discussions and impasses and rejections and press reports, which have resulted in a loss of public confidence in some of our school affairs. And I think in the vote down of school budget, it brings to an orderly conclusion these processes 30 days before the budget election. And I feel that this is a very important part of the package in terms of benefit to both teachers and to schools, and ultimately we have to judge all of these things and what the effect on children is going to be. And they are the ones who actually, we operate the schools for the children. And I believe this is a good bill for teachers and for school boards, but especially for children, because it will allow these people to dispose of these issues in time that the public can get their blood pressure down prior to an election.
I'm wondering particularly about the new language there of by a petition containing the signatures of, instead of 15%, you require 30%. And I'm wondering if you're not building in a little, make it kind of tough on the group to not be responsive, they got to get more signatures. And when your initiative and referendum on legislative action is no more than what, 10% of the people agree with things.
Mr. Chairman, this particular point were discussed very thoroughly in the Senate Education Committee, and this language was pulled from there. Now, the 40% that is referred to in this is if an organization has membership consisting of 40% of the people in that unit, then they can call an election without petition. And what they were saying then is that if you don't have 40% of the people as members, then it ought not to be 2 weeks before you have an election. And so they determine then that you should be able to call an election with 30%. And if there's another unit that wants to be on the ballot, they can intervene with 10%. Now, these figures are a slight modification from what came before. They were determined by the Senate Education Committee. The AFT was represented at that particular time. There is an additional change in this section, and that states that you would continue to represent until the challenge. In other words, so you would represent for a year, and then if there was no challenge, the incumbent organization would continue on. So that would represent a change. It stands now, provides that within 30 days after the beginning of the school year, that you would have to hold an election, or at least this would be interpretation used in many places. This would be a change. The other change, there are two other current substantive changes in this section. One of those would state that if you have more than 10 people in a unit, then you would not have the choice of individual representation. And this is simply a feasibility approach that. If you get so many people, and it isn't feasible for the board to bargain with each of them individually. If you got less than 10, they could probably take care of it, and that would handle all the smaller districts and so forth. The other change is that the choice of committee, which is used in some districts in Oregon, would also be required. They would have to show an element of support, and would either have to have the intervening 10% or the 30% in the event that they wish to initiate the election in the first place.
Let me give you a specific example. And I'm the Al Densmore Young Church Committee, you know, because I don't like what's happened and some things that are going on. And in order for me not just to call an election, it's going to have to take 30% of the people, right?
That's correct.
Well, I think that's wrong, at least in my judgment, because I think we're not asking for any more than calling an election. But anyway, let's move on.
If I could respond, Representative Densmore. What this would do, when you reduce it to 10%, I think, and you look at it from where we are at this stage in history, and I think the pattern has been pretty well established that the large local associations or the large units, Medford, Salem, Portland, Davidson, these groups are going the organizational route, the large ones. Now, there are some reasonably large ones that have gone the other way. Forest Grove, I believe, Tigers, Ontario, that have gone by choice of committee. But if you go down to district with 50 teachers in, you could require an election from 5 members of the Young Turk Club, as you have stated, and the feeling was that it creates an unnecessary expense and a problem, and that reasonably you should be able to get 15 people out of the faculty on that side. And that's really the ones we're dealing with for the most part on the choice of committee. So we have 2 organizations going, the choice of committee could intervene with 10% with no problem.
May I speak to that too, Mr. Chairman? Here again is a reasonable compromise. And from large districts to small districts, as Mr. Danielson has pointed out, if you have less than 10 teachers, or 10 teachers or less, or 10 administrators or less, you need not participate in this activity, you're exempt. But if you have a very large district in which there is a strong jurisdictional dispute still in the wind, those districts would have preferred. A board would have preferred to have had elections only every 3 years or so, and to have said you couldn't have an election more frequently than every 3 years. This does guarantee, however, that a new election is possible with a larger number of persons than just those who might be in the Young Turks. The reason for the compromise is that you'll have to remember that it's becoming very difficult to find people who are willing to serve on school boards. One anymore, and it's very difficult to keep a school district operating with any kind of management order at all because you are involved these days in trying to put together a levy election that will hopefully pass an election. You're involved in trying to get a budget completed by budget deadlines, which Representative Anderson knows about. We've worked in local government for a long time on the deadlines for budget messages and budget hearings and the election deadline dates. You are in a district like, I wish the chairman were still here, in a district like Milwaukee, where they have this year been involved in unification also. You're using all the same people to perform all of those functions, and the opportunities for administrators and board people to do something about keeping the railroad running is becoming increasingly difficult. There just aren't that many of them. And so this attempt to come at some kind of order in this that would be a compromise among those positions.
Well, unless I'm wrong, this petitioning has to take place so early in the school, and the statute is 30 days after the first day of each school year.
Right.
And, as I see it, it's not close to the budget deadline for Dr. Goff. And I don't know, I'll just make one more statement, and that's that a awful lot of times the legislature has to submit questions to the people in the referendum, it's really costly. But that's part of the thing. Also, there is.
We're really not talking about the government by the people without some sort of order and control in it. We're talking about administrative.
There's a fine line, though, between order and inflexibility.
All right.
And also, mandatory separation is in the bill, right?
Right.
Between
I mean, I'd just like to make one point clear on these election percentages. To the best of my knowledge, based on the hearings that were held in the Senate, I believe the AFP was in accord, and I would like to have it placed on the record. There is no intent on our part here to try to prevent somebody from intervening on us as a result of placing higher election requirements. That is not the purpose of this at all.
AFP was in accord with the 40%.
And also, then, also this bill then does not speak to the question of ultimate responsibility. Then, if you don't come to a conclusion after you follow the mediation process, it still reverts back to the supervisor.
Yes, it does. They have to make the ultimate decision.
Which is also true of the other Senate bill, I might add. That one changed.
Is there any difference in language in the Senate bill between the first and both discussed?
No, this is taken from that bill.
So roughly what you've done is to take the provisions of the Senate bill relating to negotiation and
No.
No.
We've deleted about four features in the Senate bill. One was the wage hours and taking employment. They deleted and was shortened somewhat in the first two. The second change was that they had inserted a management rights clause of a fashion in the Senate bill. They deleted the language, nothing in this section of the Senate to affect the powers and duties of the district board. This language was reinserted in this version and the management rights clause was deleted. Of course, that serves that function, so it no longer be necessary. There's a little bit of different language in terms of the written agreement. And I might add that the reason that this is there is we did not wish to preclude the possibility of oral agreement. It may be beneficial to allow either party to submit in writing. And this version, the other Senate language, is a little stronger in terms of that. The Senate also has included a section for permitted binding arbitration. In other words, if the parties agree, then they could submit to binding arbitration. That has also been deleted from this section of the act. I might say at this point, I think I directly picked this up, that there is an omission in this. Last 9 minutes, we've been a little bit of a hurry on this, but probably was omitted in the Senate bill originally, and then they pulled it back for the purpose of putting it in, and I think it was clearly intended in both versions, and that was to a simple phrase in that down that says that the period of representation shall be for a minimum of 1 year, and this was to stop from having an election every second or third month, and I guess it was intended, but I don't believe it's clear in there, and I think Tom has about a 3 or 4 word amendment of insertion to take care of that, sufficient for Mr. Leakey. I don't have it, but
it's a little more difficult than that. The problem comes up on page 3, and that's the paragraph 4. Where it says, committee or organization selected to represent the teachers or administrators shall be the exclusive representatives of the teachers or administrators for the purpose of ORS 342460, and probably it needs to be inserted there for at least 1 year, or until such time as the petition file. Mm-hmm. The purpose is to make sure you don't have two elections in 1 year.
So you're rather asking for at least 1 year
or until. Or at least 1 year or longer unless a petition.
Yes, I concur, and I'm trying to find it in the amendments prepared by Legislative Council.
They made the same mistake in this. They made 314 because it was pulled back for further reasons.
Mm-hmm. in, on page 5 of the amendments dated May 26, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10 lines from the top, it reads 342.460, and immediately thereafter insert for at least 1 year or.
Right. No, hers are the amendments, not the engrossed bill, I guess.
Dated May 26th. And then a line down from the top on page 5. The line begins 342.460. Immediately thereafter, insert for at least 1 year or.
Thank you.
May I be excused, Mr. Chairman? Go back to,
No.
They may be passing bills out of that House Education Committee that are in.
I don't think that, so we have most of
the chairman says they
moved to adopt the amendment dated May 26th.
Mm-hmm.
Make the amendment to check on the motion. They not the first call roll. Ben Moore?
Aye.
Howard?
Aye.
Chris?
Aye.
Howard? I would move that the percentage listed on page 4 of the amendment, now listed as 30, be retained at the present 15%. I would move that separate to page 4 of the committee amendment. Page 4 moves on page 4 of the adopted amendment, line 9.
This is the first time in 18 years I've ever heard the school board and any association come in here and make any kind of agreement without being in each other's throats. I think a lot of work's going into this. I think it's about time we supported them. I think this is pretty responsible people in the place.
I would agree. Question on motion. First call roll.
Jason?
Aye.
Howard?
No.
Mark McGivern?
Aye.
Mark?
No.
Well, you said that was too bad. Was it nice?
I think that that kind of decision has to be made by the employee group, in part, but I, you can understand that. In a school district like mine, where the jurisdictional dispute overrides everything else we're doing, the question of how often an election is going to be called and the ease with which you can call an election anytime becomes a very disconcerting operation. Thank you very much.
Senate Bill 370. Nobody signed up. Now, you want to make a report of what's going on?
I'm waiting.
370.
I still would recommend, based on looking at it, that we have a short hearing.
What's this?
Yeah, it's a hearing.
A hearing for simple thing, committee bill from the Senate, they didn't send anybody over.
Well, it appears to me, so I guess we would talk it over then. It appears to extend the scope of the EQC from just public, human-wide protection to wildlife, livestock, fish, aquatic life, and their habitat. That's easy to see. That's all the bill does. That would appear to be a large departure from the intent of the EQC now. I don't know if that's a good or bad thing. I suppose we need to talk it over.
Yeah, let's try to get somebody to set the tone around tonight.
I would be reluctant to pass it out.
I would too.
Who sponsored it in the Senate? Who is the
Senate Environment Committee?
Well, part of it.
Can we get a command performance from the EQC?
Part of it makes real good sense, but then some of it.
All right. Representative Ms. Harrison?
I know that. I'm not there.
And the attorney over the Senate Bill 396. The Senate Court made a new pass recommendation. What happened to the other bill? 15-something or another against me. Ron? Ron? Bring your calendar, please. It's a
member of the committee. Senate Bill 432 is a simple safety measure. Would require that railroads in Oregon, when using self-propelled vehicles, GR to terminals for inspecting trains, equipment or facilities, or transporting employees or materials for the repair of such trains, equipment or facilities, this propelled vehicle be designed, constructed, and operated in accordance with the safety orders regulations adopted under ORS 645.005 to 654.155. These ORSs give authority to the Workman's Compensation Board, the Accident Prevention Division, which is a department of the Workman's Compensation Board. This is the department which establishes the rules, regulations, and provisions which constitute the Oregon Safety Code Basic Industrial Safety. Presently, many Oregon railroads are using a self-propelled vehicle which does not conform to these Industrial Safety Code regulations. It is a dangerous vehicle. This vehicle, called a Yardbird, is a three-wheeled, rubber-tired, scooter-type cart powered by a small, low-horsepower gasoline engine, 515 horsepower. The gasoline tank sits immediately behind the operator's head without any protective covering or safety shielding whatsoever. In one yard in California, one of these tanks exploded. Fortunately, the operator escaped with minor injuries. We've had one fatality involving one of these Yardbird vehicles. In September 1969, a Southern Pacific employee in Klamath Falls, in the Klamath Falls yard, Mr. Dale D. Sackett, was killed. The use of these unsafe vehicles has been protested to the carriers by the men who had to use them and work around them. Only when a fatality occurred were they removed temporarily. Their use is again being contemplated by the Southern Pacific Company in Oregon. This Yardbird vehicle is objectionable because of its low profile, inability to move and reverse, no overhead protection such as a roll bar or metal roof shield against falling objects, poor lighting, loud motor noise, and its lack of power, among several not mentioned. Lives are jeopardized by the continued use of this type of a vehicle. Inspection and enforcement in accordance with the Oregon Basic Industrial Safety Code is presently available without additional funding by the Accident Prevention Division of the Workman's Compensation Board. This safety measure is not unreasonable, and railroads in Oregon should not be exempt from provision of the applicable safety provisions of the Oregon Industrial Safety Code. You might say that the Senate Bill 432, passed out of the Senate Highway Committee, unanimously passed with 30 aye votes in the Senate. I think it's a terribly important measure, and I urge its adoption. The railroads are, but the use of this type of vehicle is not regulated by the public utilities.
Why not?
PUC regulation of railroads is very limited. They don't regulate in this area. We conferred with the Accident Prevention Division, and they have assured us that they can regulate this type of vehicle under their code. No, we haven't talked to Commissioner Haley about this particular problem.
What are you doing?
They're looking for inspecting trains.
Going alongside?
Yeah.
Why do you look at that?
It just happens to be the nature of the design and construction of the vehicle. I really don't know. It's a small, low horsepower vehicle, and they usually go the length of the train and turn around. It's just being added expense. They don't feel that they have, evidently, I really don't know, or get that much good out of having reverse or being able to. It's so light, one man can pick up the back. Real small vehicle.
It looks about like a golf cart.
A cart would offer more protection.
Well, I think that's
But they don't have any kind of overhead shielding or anything to guard the operator's feet.
What over there?
They drive alongside. See, it's very narrow, representing anything between the tracks and the yard, where they use these vehicles for inspecting a train and cars, objects on top of cars, or straps hanging down while they're inspecting for the bad order cars. They strike the operator. The light on the vehicle is set low so they can see the running gear or the truck primarily, inspect the air brake system and other appurtenances that are low or under the car body to take the light. That's the rear light there. That's the little red light. That's the back. Each one of those has another picture on the back of it.
This man is carrying a light, so they can offer them.
The object is to have them make this inspection as they're moving along without leaving the vehicle unless there's some necessary repair to be made. Yes, has a single light, very low.
What are they for? To see where he's going?
No. He has another hand light there, a lantern, an inspection lantern that he uses to observe.
There's a light over there.
If
he hasn't done it,
it
looks like there'd be a lot of light
on it. It really isn't if you. This, Mr. Chairman, this is a situation. I do feel a certain interest in this. The reason my father works for the Southern Pacific and Climate Calls and happened to be foreman of the crew the night that Mr. Sackett was killed, and that was my first involvement in the thing. And the men, after Mr. Sackett was killed, we talked to him about it. The men were afraid of him before, and they still are. They're very concerned about this. And we just feel that this is a minimum requirement and something that, that certainly will offer them the protection. And,
We're not trying to outlaw them or anything. We're only asking that they conform with the requirements of the Oregon Basic Industrial Safety Code for warning devices, reverse lights, overhead protection, and loading, and protection for the operator. Well, if they would put a cover over that tank, some kind of protective shielding, you never know when there's going to be an object fall or strike it, or it's going to get hit. If it was hit by anything, it's knocked loose, and the gas line comes loose and leaks right down on the single operator's seat. That's one particular. I don't know what the exact cause of the explosion was that occurred in California with the gas tank, but they did have. They have had problems with them. That's where they first begun to be used in the Roseville Yard.
These pictures, incidentally, were taken in the last 6 weeks, 8 weeks. Yes, I'd like those back. I only have that one series, but you may keep them for the rest of the committee for a while.
I'll
put them in this envelope, and I'd appreciate it if they could be returned.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Mr. Wilson, Jr., ORASPC code.
Yes. Transportation Company. My name is O.M. Wilson, and I'm an attorney. I'm here representing the Oregon Railroad Association and Southern Pacific Transportation Company. Representative Hurd has explained what the bill does, that is, it requires that any self-propelled vehicle operated for the stated purposes in railroad yards conform to the requirements to be established by the Workmen's Compensation Board. Now, my understanding may be an error, but it is that there are no present regulations that would apply to the operation of these vehicles. So what we're talking about is empowering the Workmen's Compensation Board to establish regulations. We aren't talking about subjecting these vehicles to regulations that are now in force for the fairly obvious reason that the board has never had control over this kind of operation before, so that they haven't had occasion to write applicable regulations. And the bill would not, unfortunately, constitute any guarantee against there being a fatal accident as a result of crossing over a railroad track. The railroad opposed the bill as it is written, first because it's not necessary or desirable. These vehicles have been used for not a very long time, at least in the state of Oregon, and generally throughout the system of Southern Pacific and the other railroads. So a lot of the changes that have been made on the vehicle have been as a result of experiments trying to adapt the vehicle to the job it's supposed to do. Some of the changes that have been made up to this point are moving the choke, which used to be backed by the motor and gears, up front, to reduce the risk of someone having to put his hand in the running mechanism in order to adjust the choke and ignition system. There's been a light added to the top, a red light, to provide warning of the position of the vehicle. When the vehicle was first introduced, it has always had a light straight ahead and one that shines out to the side for train inspection purposes. The seat height has been adjusted. There's been muffler added. Mud guards have been added to reduce the splashing. There's been a rack added for material purposes so that train inspectors could carry tools and equipment required to make on-track repairs. And a shield has been added for the gas tank of the vehicle. Now, if regulations were adopted by the Workman's Compensation Board, the board would be starting from scratch, and the regulations would freeze developments as far as the vehicles are concerned, or at least that's what concerns the railroads. And then, too, Mr. Pippen mentioned that the federal law doesn't apply to the vehicles, and at this point that's true, but the first regulations under the Federal Railroad Safety Act of 1970 aren't required to be promulgated until October 16 of 1971, which is the anniversary of the passage of the bill. The bill requires that those matters be reported back within a year from passage, and at this point we don't know what the state of federal law will be and whether or not it will include matters such as train inspection vehicles. But apart from really what we regard as the merits of whether or not these things ought to be subject to additional regulation, is the question of if the legislature should determine that regulation is appropriate, whether or not the Workmen's Compensation Board is the proper agency. We don't believe it is, because the railroads have never been subjected to regulation by the Workmen's Compensation Board. And if the legislature should regard regulation of the vehicles as appropriate, we believe that it would be far better to operate the regulation through the vehicle of the Public Utility Commissioner's Office, which has had considerable experience with railroad operations, while the Workmen's Compensation Board has had none. If there are any questions from an operations standpoint, Mr. Babers, the Assistant Superintendent of Southern Pacific, is available to answer.
Who built this monstrosity in the first place? Is it a Southern Pacific product?
No, it's manufactured by a company in Gardena, California. Its name has changed, and I can...
What was it before they made all these improvements here?
It was called the Yardbird, and these improvements have been made just through experience and use with the vehicle and train inspection.
Almost all of these cars have to have an overhead protection for the operator. When there's no protection on this thing whatsoever, from above or behind, or
they even use a golf cart.
Well, this is a vehicle that's adapted for it. It operates slowly. It's at the right height for inspecting trains, and that's the reason it was chosen.
Well, really, I worked all my life in outdoors and safety, and that's
all
right. Do you require the railroad men to wear metal helmets?
I can't answer that. Mr.
Davis. Yeah. My name is Charles Babers, Assistant Superintendent of the Oregon Division, Southern Pacific Company. And to answer your question, these men do and are required to wear hard hats. The golf cart concept is what we've attempted to come up with here. Now, there has been some testimony of the fact that they're new and, you know, and they are new in the state of Oregon. But we have had them in yards Pine Bluff and Englewood Yard in Houston, other places,
in Bakersfield, California, Los Angeles. We don't have them yet. Practically speaking, we are trying the trial and error method that we've got. We've bought the best money can buy of this thing. The golf cart now concept, as I stated, has been used, but we've had to modify it in order for these men to inspect the train. They have to be low enough to look under the car as they go down. And to put a roof on it or a covering over it, the man, as he finds a bad order, then he is stretched out and, you know, fairly low. But as he tries, when he starts to get up, then he has a problem with getting up with the roof. Now, we've experimented with the covers and what have you at different locations, and this hasn't been feasible. We did have a number of complaints, a large number of complaints at Eugene when these were first put in. And the committee, I think it was about a three-page letter they wrote, things they wanted changed, things they wanted done. Now, the committee, the men working with these vehicles and all, they didn't want to use them as they were. And there was very little use of them to start with, and we didn't force the use of them. But as they have been modified, and as we have gone along with the suggestions that these people using them have made, we find that there's very little objection to them now. And the most of it is because of the seat arrangement and because it was too low. So they've taken the back. A lot of these men take the back off and set it on top of the seat as we knew it. Rather than have a backrest, they set, like, you know, with the back on there to raise them up a little higher. So we have adjusted the seats and all to accommodate these people and are trying to work with them. And we think that with this, we may come up with a product that and a vehicle that the men can work with. As far as reverse, and it's when they start down a train, it's between, if there were two trains on the track, it would be probably a foot wider than this, maybe 18 inches. There's no way they could turn around in this area, and they start from one end and they go to the other. This is what's required of them, if they're walking or if they're riding. The tool rack, bar, brake shoes, there's even cutting torch put on some of them, are all placed behind them where they can work them, and they've all been equipped with this rack to preclude the possibility of the tools coming forward and hitting them. Now, there would only be one of these vehicles in this area at a time. So as far as getting hit from behind or anything of this nature, there's nobody else to hit them other than another one of their own vehicles. And as a rule, and unless something would happen, there would only be one of these going down each side of the train, and there'd be no reason to have anything else. The guard on the gas tank or the shield was a big complaint to start with. That, to the best of my knowledge, has been taken care of. We haven't had any problems with the people using them or any complaints from them since we put the shields on the gas tank. Yes, sir, we do.
Operating
if they do, if he has these pictures, then it's something that someone has put on. Yes, if I could. I couldn't explain why they don't, but we do require hard hats.
You have shields on the aircraft?
Yes, sir.
These pictures,
this one doesn't have any shield on it.
These are reasonable.
This one is a shield. Well, evidently, then, if this is a fact of being 6 to 8 weeks old, something has been picked out other than what is normally used. The tool rack isn't on here. The cover is on the motor. The red light that the men requested so that they could be seen by crews working in the yard is not on this particular vehicle.
On the back.
This is only a bar, and it's in its proper place, but the red light is not on there.
Is the red light on the back?
No, is it on the back? Yes, sir. It's set right off of the right shoulder of the man operating it, just about head level.
How do you enforce your rule?
Supervision is the only way. You mean, and do you have a particular, I mean, if a man doesn't wear a hard
hat? Okay, if the new vehicle doesn't have a red light on it,
that is the responsibility, if the light is burned out, to see that it is replaced, yes. The man operating it, or the foreman, if he observes it, or whatever. That is why they were put on it, and that's the suggestion and request of the employees using it.
Who checked up on the foreman?
We have a master mechanic who is in charge of the home mechanical department. This master mechanic works with him, a general car foreman. We have three of those, one assigned to each shift, and they're in the yard and about where these things are being operated.
Are there reports when someone violates the rules?
very seldom. The stool pigeon thing, concept is just the same on the railroad as it is anyplace else. It's something you have to catch yourself, or you're not going to find out about it. The men are not going to turn one another.
In other words, if you're enforcing
procedure, you the enforcement procedure here is just the same as it is on the state highways or anything else. The authorities have to catch them at it, and if they don't, why, there's very little done about it. And this is what we have to do, and we have the people to do this.
You don't make the periodic inspections?
Oh, yes, sir. This is done. Oh, and this is why these general foremen, these people are in. Not specifically to look at these vehicles, and there is no rule requiring this. It's an agreement, informal, if you will, with the employee that we will have these things on. And as a result of their local grievance committees, that this is what they want on them. And as I said, they didn't use them to start with. Very little use of them. But as we have improved them, at their request and things, we find very few instances where they are not using it. It has not been forced on any of them at this time. They've been available, but they haven't been told to use them.
Other questions? No, thank you very much. Any further testimony on House Bill 432? Senate Bill 432. Now that closes the hearing. I asked the Secretary to go call and send it to the Yankees for the bill we have. They sponsored it. They may tell it. It's at the request of the Parks Department. Yeah. Well, they have to tell it. They're going to get here on the table. She can back out a couple of work that's part of the bill we have here. Encourage you to pass out.
Well, they do it, and the administration does it.
Dr. Larson to say more verification. I think the need comes.
I just found out this is a damn good bill. It's got Howard Martin.
Reduce the terms of state board of higher education.
members, 6 4-year and none of them 2 4-year terms.
You know, I oppose this unless it's just, I don't like to have the run right standing with the governor. For 4 years, I do think it tends to get a political situation once in a while.
I got
3:30 in front of me. Oh, I thought you
said, forget it. 3:30, reduce the number of terms and length of terms of the State Board of Higher Education and the State Board of Education. And then 4-5. And I got to do something earlier for 4 years.
No.
Finishing background, I think I'm a John Monsby. I guess the grades are not dead good. Originally, they put the ability just to change the starting time from March 1st to July 1st. I've got all the minutes now. You want 5 years?
I think that's the only point you really got to work on.
Maybe 10 4 or something.
With the governor. I can remember when Governor Hall went in and you would have just got a clean sweep of the whole.
You can't go on and on and say, oh, you're a place
on Saturday. He would have. They would have. We've got the highway.
Let's
revert that to
House
of Senate
Bill
722.
Are you permitted with
this report?
Can I talk on it?
You
realize
it's all
out of
connection
to
get the big hitters.
Good morning.
Gentlemen, I'm Rod Porter, State Highway Engineer, and the Commission asked me to just chat with you a minute on Senate Bill 722. This is a means to stimulate the Willamette Greenway program. As you know, the present method is for local government, counties and cities, to pay 1/4. The Highway Commission pays the 1/4, and then we try to get federal funds for the other 50%. This is proving a pretty heavy burden on some local jurisdictions that just don't have the funding. The program, therefore, is not proceeding with the rapidity that it was designed to, and it's moving very slowly. With this bonding authority, the Commission feels they would be able to use this with federal funds and perhaps accomplish maybe 2/3 of the ultimate program. And this will take several years to accomplish, and by that time we'll have to take another look at it. So your Highway Commission is very much in hope that you'll see fit to give them this authority, and if you do, they feel they can carry on this program the way it should be administered. That's about all I have to say, but I'll try to answer your question.
My question is for Ms. Porter. Now, this
wouldn't
have to be approved by the people, and you already have
that. We would have, yes. Yeah, that's correct. Yes, we have the proposed budget is got all 12 line items, I would guess. Maybe. No, this not specifically.
Would this have to go by the
I can't answer that. I don't know.
No, the bonding authority. Because they could.
Well, they probably get bonding authority. They have authority to say they're directed on how to use it.
Our bond payment limitation would have to be adjusted, if this is true, because that is a line item.
I don't know if you're aware of the increase over.
Section two, line 11 and 12. It says for park, recreation, and scenic or historic places. Now, this there's a constitutional restriction that would prohibit this. In other words, the only thing that bonds can be issued for are road purposes. But these bonds can be issued for road purposes, and then the normal gas tax funds in this amount can be converted to this purpose. So it's a matter of bookkeeping is all involved.
How are you limited
under
the Constitution?
Bonding, highway bonding under the Constitution is limited for road purposes only. But the normal flow of highway funds can be used for parks as well as highways.
Actually, use this money for roads and
gas tax, weight mile tax, and that sort of thing can be used for parks as well as its highway purposes.
So what you're saying is we should hand out parks for recreational?
Yeah, that is correct. Council has informed us that this would not meet the Constitution if this is left in.
Yeah. Then how are we guaranteed that you use it for the
part of the put it in the bill if you don't cut the commission.
I'm not saying
they just do it. They what they
several times a year we have to report on how we're using the funds that you've made available to us. And I think you'd have pretty good audit control on this.
Well, we do need an amendment.
Yes.
Do you have an amendment?
We're right here in the margin.
Got it. It's here in draft form on this copy.
I'm not sure if I know how it works around here. But that if we accept the amendment, it's going to take 2 days for it to get away from me. The amendment will have to be submitted as the captain. Any further discussion? Clerk, call the roll.
Hi.
Aye.
So ordered.
All right, I'll go get some.
You go talk to Dwight, you must have a ton of material. Well, by the way, we have an age of majority. What, your Senate Bill 584 is here.
That's
the marrying one, but we also have another one. So late in majority.
Anything you do now, then further with the 18-year-old, you're just going to jeopardize your, if you have to go to vote, you're going to jeopardize your chances of passing the 18-year-old vote.
Well, practically, I think it's
585.
There has to be some other way of working this thing out besides spread it out. It's only Pendleton, and we passed about four different bills just for the round up that only saves it. This goes all the way to the state.
All right. Does anybody want to pass 585?
658.
LIED.
We have a hearing this afternoon.
We do?
Yeah, we have a hearing.
We do. We have a hearing. Oh, we have a hearing. We shouldn't write that. We shouldn't be passing it out without a hearing.
But pass it out and then.
Hold that. That's got to be the
best. We're going to go around and cut down the amount of hearing we have to have.
I'd like to hear.
I don't remember about Senate Bill 691 withholding school funds and substandard districts. Wasn't that the gentleman table? And then answer will the Senate Bill 691 be tabled for a call? Well, let's wait a second. Yeah, you're in. Yes. He is.
They don't even get the kids to school.
Let's go back to the Senate Bill on 18-year-old thing and we'll marry some of that.
584.
584.
What is that good for?
Senate Bill 437, allowing 18-year-olds to sell booze.
We did have a hearing on that.
Yeah,
way back in April. Hold on up to that.
No, well, yeah, but I mean, well, man, it brought, I think Eric takes more than one life. So back there, and yes, I got a little bit of
437 is a good deal.
Let's call roll on Pat. Oh, Pat Man, 437, told me to do that presentation. Let's call roll.
$1 million that somebody's investing for them. If I was on that board, I'd all...
Everything Howard, let me just send a 185 table. First call roll.
Okay.
Aye.
Yes, Howard.
Aye.
Howard.
Yes.
Aye.
You wouldn't say that when the press is here, would you?
No.
It's on the tape.
You don't have to strike.
Governor's office, who worked with him for months, and and we finally came up something not entirely suitable as far as the Farm Bureau and the other farm organizations were concerned. But I think it's time that this legislature will do something for these unfortunate people. And if you have had the opportunity of visiting a Mike Berger camp, you realize we need this bill. And what it does is just set up minimum standards as far as housing for these unfortunate people. The second bill that I'm interested in is 332, the Minimum Manning Act for a railroad bill, for manning trains. And I advise mostly as far as the yard work. Testimony was heard in the outside week as evidence that there have been many accidents as a result of lack of this extra man in the train. And this we would hope that by the passage of this bill, that they would have the help and be able to maintain a proper lookout to avoid these accidents. The last bill, 234, and I think you just received that in your committee, Roger. I believe it's 234, minimum wage for migrant workers. And I think it's $1.35 an hour.
Yes.
Most places and most farms in Oregon, this doesn't apply to these words, most farms in Oregon have to pay more than that. In fact, the soil and plant quality is made over $2 an hour for a potato sorter in that area. So we're not asking a lot, but I think it's a step in the right direction as far as the unfortunate people are concerned. Three bills that I'm really concerned
about. Let me ask you on that last one. You say it does allow piece work?
It doesn't apply to piece work, but minimum wage.
We're going to have a hearing on this later, but I want you to have the opportunity to talk about it. I don't want this hearing set for, but it's either going to be this afternoon or tomorrow.
But I sincerely hope that this committee will put these three bills to the vote of the full committee and want to take positive action.
Our problem, Senator, has just been that we've got so many bills, we're barely able to get them all heard. And we're going to sit down either this afternoon or tomorrow and after hearing some more bills on a work session and try to cover as much ground as possible. And we will definitely bring these up tomorrow.
What was the last?
Tomorrow. Today or tomorrow.
But that's it. What was the last bill?
We're going to hearing.
34.
Tomorrow. I hope we're planning going to fall.
What did I get out here?
I'll talk to you about that. I realize it's late in the day, but we have here is the most. Isn't that late?
What?
I understood you guys said we'd be here another week.
I doubt it, Jack.
I don't doubt we'll get out.
Let's start with Senate Bill 144, Brown Lamb.
Mr. Chairman, my name is Brown Lamb. I'm sat down with the Legislative Fiscal Committee. This bill is introduced as a request for fiscal committee after the study they made in the last interim. It deals with the problem of the Game Commission. As you may know, the Game Commission is in a rather unique situation with regard to its recreational land. You know, this is the only state-owned property in which the state makes in lieu of payments for ad valorem property taxes to the government. The commission, like other taxpayers, has faced the problem of rising taxes and faced the dilemma of paying on what is essentially farm and timber land taxes which have increased by three times in a 10-year period. These taxes, of course, are paid by the fees which are license fees which are paid by sportsmen for the promotion of fish and wildlife management. The commission has been quite concerned over this. I don't know whether they were notified of this hearing. It's kind of expected them to explain their dilemma too, but since they aren't here, I'll go into it a little bit. They have sought relief in the last two sessions in an effort to have so that they can pay taxes on their land as value for farm and timber loose use. Well, this problem arises essentially in the Sylvia Island game management area, which lies in Montgomery County. I don't know if you're familiar with Sylvia Island. It's a large tract of land which is surrounded by a rapidly urbanizing area, and because of this has taxed it as high as the best use has been taxed other than farm land, which it essentially is. And in sea drain crops to provide refuge and food supply for ducks. It also serves a wide range of recreational needs. There's quite a bit of fishing goes on there, and there is quite a bit of recreation that goes on that is really unrelated to the programs that the Game Commission is carrying on. It's a popular area for picnicking, bird watching, water skiing, boating, and the like. So the fiscal committee introduced this bill, which would provide for the commission of recreational lands to be taxed at farm and timber use value. It was amended considerably in the Senate Committee on Taxation. I don't think the amendments do any violence to the objectives of the fiscal committee. In fact, I think they approve the bill to a considerable extent, because it meets the only objection which I know has been raised against this bill, in that were immediately affected, it would result in a property, a rather significant property tax shift from the Game Commission to the other property owners in the area. The bill is now written to provide for a phase-in of this shift over a 10-year period. This, I think, is very fair. It's quite acceptable to the Game Commission. I think the bill in its present form is a very good bill and should receive your favorable consideration.
Thanks, Ron. I'm well aware of it. I think the committee ought to realize say this. Not politics, but for the last two sessions at least, the former representative from Columbia County was able to get any consideration that is delayed. I know for a fact the Game Commission, the property the Game Commission owns on Savage Island, is being appraised at its basically its highest and best use in the eyes of the Columbia County assessor, and its highest and best use really is to get as much property tax money from the Scappoose School District as possible. It's got it assessed way over what it is for recreational purposes. Our interim committee studied the problem of urban recreation. There's no single instance, I think, in any major metropolitan area where such a sizable piece of land offers such outstanding outdoor recreation close to Portland. And if Columbia County Assessor continues that, we're not going to have it anymore. So I think this is excellent. Questions for Mr. Lamb?
Game Commission.
They're bleeding and dying for it.
Yeah. They
want to. I'm sure the whole commission and John McKean and all people have been here if we had, really given a big notice. Okay.
Mr. Chairman, I wonder if I could have the indulgence of the committee to say a few words about 151. I wasn't able to be here at the hearing about that.
You sure it's in our committee?
Yes.
That's just
the
real
record of the public records law. Well, that's what you took, but we don't have it yet.
We don't have public records?
Well, I'm going to check on that.
151. Yeah, we have that. 73 is a public record.
Well,
while you're sitting here, let's find
151
if we can.
Okay. Briefly, Mr. Chairman,
Mr. Anderson knows that 151 we put in the book.
This is another fiscal committee bill, rising out of the bill.
Wait till we get it. It's not going to be any good for you to talk about it. We don't really have a copy of it. How about on 144? Howard and Lewis. Senate Bill 144 to the full committee with a due pass recommendation. Let's call a roll.
Anderson?
Aye.
Howard?
Aye.
Martin?
Aye.
I'll carry it.
Adrian.
Is that your Adrian? Yeah. I didn't even bring a pillow in there. I'm offering to relieve him. I'm on my sugar tablet. Somebody look at 159 and figure out what it is.
That's supposed to be up for a hearing?
Yeah, nobody showed up. It's one of these Senate bills sponsored by the State and Federal Affairs. Provides for alternative measurements by weight in tons for royalty computation on material removed from commercial and
Well,
why don't you explain the bill a little
better? Well, the law now says that the state land board, in working with lessees or landlords when they lease rivers, they compute their charges by yards. And everything in the last 10 years switched over to using the tonnage
method and the outcome of in the last 2 years.
You said 151?
Yeah, definitely.
But I thought we tied it up.
Major yards.
No. I have nothing further to say.
Okay, I want the opportunity to make it. It's more accurate, Major. They'll measure it right. They've measured it right in the riverbed before they dig it. And this came out of the submersible advisory or whatever it was.
You actually put on a new auditor 4 years ago on State Land Board. Is this an easier way to compute the
times? Yes, it is. It's the way everybody's done to do this. The state requires them to have scale, but the state cannot charge them by the ton. They have to charge them by the yard. So the state changing so they can do it all one way.
That sounds like a reasonable deal.
The only thing that got out of it. Have we had a hearing? We just had it.
I move
the full committee
with due pass.
Representative Howard moves Senator 159, the full committee
of
the due pass recommendation.
Call and
roll.
Addison?
Aye.
Gensmore?
Aye.
Howard?
Aye.
Martin?
Aye.
Did you get the carrot?
Yeah?
No.
It is the
way. Explain it. Representative McPherson is chairing a Judiciary Committee meeting right now, so he won't be able to be here. I'd like to get him and the whole committee here and do some work on some of these various bills that we have. Look at one thing while we have the book up here. Senator 166, I think, and this is for the three of us who are on the Elections Committee, it's in total conflict with Senate Bill 20. I'm going to take an extension amendment for you. What? We changed this very section here to take out the author, you know, in both states, and it still refers to the author. Now, I don't know if this is really necessary in light of Senate Bill 20.
I moved the table as well.
That, as
you said, within Senate Bill 20, and there's a conference committee met yesterday, and there's no objection to that. So, we should know today if Senate Bill 20 can go, hopefully. So, as we won't need it.
we were going to simply.
There's some things in 314 that I think are very good, but being very realistic, we keep those to lose the people together without losing everything.
What else?
Amendments to 1525.
Well, they're supposed to have amendments to 314 by today.
Well, then.
Mary said she has.
Well, I talked to her yesterday on the floor, and she said that she had asked Kathleen to draft amendments to make the provisions of 1525 applicable.
The 314, and just strip everything out of 314?
Yeah.
All right.
Now, I'd like to look at those before I...
Before you set them.
Okay. I know what she's doing, but I still want to see.
All right. Let's ask this. How did you vote on this one, Norm? 1525. This is the one that Danielson and Rigby and Mary Reiki all testified on.
You voted aye because the first time they've seen it again.
Honestly. Well, is there what I'd like to do is run those past. Oh, we'll run them past you and then before we have any discussion on it. We'll hold off on that.
Doesn't like the red cloth, or just an attempt to do something, but nobody really knows quite what to do.
No, I'm liking it.
Well, the standards are uniform, and there is a uniform tool or a uniform situation. It's like applying something for everybody, and it doesn't fit. I wouldn't worry about Parnell. I might worry about the next superintendent.
I'd worry about
they'd run against a superintendent using this, saying, boy, they're wasting your money. I'd worry about pressure from outside on the Board of Education in Parnell, saying, well, now look, you got an easy out, do it. I just think
you lost. We've got the whole hammer now. We just got to take some of it. It's like having a 20-inch gun. They never shoot it, but if you give them a 22, they'll all start really banging away now. Well, Jack, would you find out?
Yeah,
let's hold off on the rest of this stuff until we get McPherson back. Then we've got five people on the committee we don't end up. I'm going to try to see if we can get excused sometime during the session, because that'll assure all the members can come this way. Judiciary's meeting, and he's got an election meeting.
We do.
You can get down here and come on over.